I don't think people have an appreciation for his art form. And since you've seen
well,
it up
look,
close
I'm
gonna, and personal.
I'm going to tell you a quick story that I've never told publicly. So I'm giving you guys this.
Oh, yay. This is, yay.
I think Donald Trump is going to win Pennsylvania and Ohio. I feel it.
Oh, God, I hope you're right.
She's got the chills.
The Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast.
No one has common sense anymore.
Welcome to another edition of the Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast. So excited to have with us Rick Grinnell, who at this point, you're famous for so many things, but right now I feel like you're famous for your Twitter feed, which I enjoy so much. I cannot tell you. And I know right now one of the things that you want to be most famous for and get more recognition for is this whole Serbia-Kosovo negotiation that you facilitated and which led to, well, it led to some viral videos going around of you on Friday because of how much you attacked the press, which was glorious.
It was delicious. It was absolutely delicious. It's what we've been waiting for. It was everything I'd hoped it would be.
So my question for you about that is what, because obviously the press is not covering it in the way that they should or that you expect or that any of us deserve. So what do you want the public to know about that deal?
Yes.
First of all, thank you for having me. What a great opening question. I love the substance. And let me just start with one line that is in this agreement that reporters really should be focused on. There's one line in here where both Serbia and Kosovo are committing to diversify their energy sources. Now, that may sound really innocent, except Serbia has 100% of their energy coming from Russia. So this was a very hard fought point for the president of Serbia to say, I'm going to diversify away from Russia, which, you know, he just said, I'm going to diversify my energy, but this is what it means. And we talked long and hard about it. He made some, you know, the sentence was longer, right, in negotiations, and he wanted it to be a little bit more simpler. And so we had tough negotiations, and he committed to this, and he knows the implications of this. This is a huge move to get these two warring countries, this perceived conflict, which in some ways is a conflict over the past 21 years, they are both agreeing to kind of move on, have economic normalization. We've been stuck for 21 years trying to get them to agree on words and phrases. Look, I'll give you another example. There's a lake that is about, I shouldn't even give this because somebody in Kosovo and Serbia is going to get angry. The majority of the lake is in Kosovo. There's a small portion of it that's in Serbia. So when we were trying to figure out how do we move these two countries towards economic cooperation, one of the things that we thought is, let's figure out how to utilize the lake. You know, there's going to be some ways to create jobs through energy projects. And so the first thing we should do is let's get the U.S. Department of Energy to send a team over and do a study, a feasibility study. What could be done with this lake? Okay. Both sides were pushing them towards this economic moment, and yet both sides fight about what we're going to call the lake.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Because the Kosovo people say, no, it should be called the name that we call it. And the Serbs say, no, it should be called the name that we call it. So what did I do is I said, Kosovo name / Serbia name.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Now I pissed off both sides.
You get it.
So
yeah.
It was like this meltdown, and that was a very tough negotiation. We kept it that way, calling it both names. People on both sides didn't like it. I already see people in Serbia and Kosovo screaming. This type of word war, symbolism, is what I said to both leaders. This won't give your people the ability to pay their mortgage. It won't put food on the table.
Yeah.
If you guys are going to continue fighting about symbolism and adjectives and verbs and nouns, we are never going to get anywhere. Put it aside and let's concentrate on economics. Now, they finally came around to doing it, but jokingly, one solution I said is, you know what? If you can't get along on the names, we're just going to call it Lake Trump.
That's perfect. I love it.
So then why isn't this getting more press? I mean, I think we kind of know a little bit of the reason why, but why are people not paying more attention to something as
significant,
as huge as this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we've got a brain dead group of journalists in Washington, D.C. that do nothing but Russia, 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 mail-in ballots, Russia, Russia, Russia. I mean, what the American people need to understand right now is that the White House press briefings are no longer about information. It's about entertainment. It's about these reporters getting fatter contracts on TV. So they have to have a viral moment. So we have to deal with the reality of what's happening in Washington, D.C. The other part of this is, you know, I've been working with the media for 25 years. When I started working with the media, a reporter at the Associated Press or, you know, The Hill or anything, they would never say your name unless they called you to check the facts.
Yeah.
Now what we have is those old school reporters are gone or they've been eaten up, because now we have these young reporters who just sit on Twitter and they repeat, retweet, recycle everybody else's stories. They never check. They don't even know how to check. They don't dig deep.
Well, you just retweeted Chris Hayes. Yeah. I just saw on your Twitter feed a moment ago where he's like, Trump is objectively pro-COVID. What in the world?
How is Twitter allowing that to happen?
Yeah,
like
it's crazy.
They're fact-checking hydroxychloroquine.
Mm-hmm.
And they're allowing this NBC reporter. I mean, what has happened to NBC News? NBC News has literally gone completely in the tank for the left. And so I think it's really important for people to understand. A lot of your listeners are going to say, well, oh, gosh, this is a lot of bad news and negativity. What can I do? I'll tell you the good news. And I'll tell you what's really positive about this is that we need a system where transparency from politicians and from Washington, D.C. is important and key. You are not going to get transparency from a news outlet that's concerned about making money. They're going to continue making money and figuring out how to pay the bills.
Yeah.
If you want transparency, you got to go straight to the sources. So we now have social media where regular people can tweet at a senator, a governor, a president, and ask questions. And so I think what we have to do is we have to demand that politicians are more transparent with the public, not the media. The media are, you know, the old way of getting to the public. Now they have a responsibility to go straight to the public. So the other onus is on the news consumer. The consumer of news has to be aggressive about multiple news sources. Yes, Russia is pushing propaganda into our discussions. No, Russia is not manipulating voting machines and interfering in our elections. Mm-hmm. They're doing what they always do, Russian propaganda. The crisis is with China, who is literally trying to go to our politicians and bribe them and use leverage over PPE issues in order to get them to shut up and downplay the China threat. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris literally are playing into that and trying to distract us with Russian propaganda while China is threatening them to shut up, or you're not going to get this PPE. You're not going to get, you know, all of the good trade deals. I mean, they're trying to hold it over our head, which is why I think it's really important to bring our supply chain home from China, and we need to be self-sufficient.
Yeah. And it changes the whole landscape of media too, because I think a lot of people still look at media as like the old guard, and they're just simply not.
I love that way of looking at social media, though, because in a lot of our podcast episodes, we've talked about just how much social media has made things bad.
Yeah.
So I like that perspective,
the
that
positivity.
You can actually use it to have direct contact. And Trump has done that so well.
Oh, my gosh.
Well.
It's one of the big reasons that people love him so much is because he's so transparent. He is what he is.
Yeah.
The good with the bad, right? I mean, people love him because he is so transparent. He is so forthcoming. And this is how things are, right?
And speaking of the transparency, when you were interim director of national intelligence, and one of the last things you did was to unclassify a lot of documents related to all of the Russia stuff and other things. I want to know if that was a job that you wanted. Like, would you have stayed in that job, or was that always going to be an interim thing? No.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, truth be told, you know, I need to write a book to get a lot of these rumors put to bed. But I had been asked to be DNI a while ago, and it just wasn't something that I was interested in. When the president asked me to step in on an interim basis because we needed to replace the other interim. And so I worked very closely with the White House officials before I agreed to do the interim DNI is to say, well, let's make sure that we know that we're going to nominate somebody permanently for the job. Knowing that we're going to nominate someone permanently, I'll step in while we're filling that gap of waiting on the Senate to confirm the person. So I took the interim job only under the agreement that we would have a permanent person. And there was. That was a path that was going right at the same time. Shortly after I said yes to the interim job, they nominated John Radcliffe and got him through. It would have been a lot faster if COVID had happened. Of course, the media in Washington was pretending like the Senate was moving quickly because they wanted me out of there. You know, I get that that plays into this, like, you know, Washington style of personalities and, you know, personnel stuff. But the reality is that it was always going to be 2 or 3 months waiting on the Senate. It turned into about 4.5 months because of COVID. And I was happy to do it because the president asked.
All right. So now you're working with the RNC. You've obviously been working on this Serbia-Kosovo deal. But would you consider another cabinet job if Trump wins again?
Not right now, no. I need a rest. Look,
we need you.
And you got to write that book, because we need a book that's positive and that people will actually want to read.
Right. Like, not another tell-all.
Yeah, we can't deal with any more of these damn tell-alls.
Yes, if I write a book, it's to really talk about the reality and the truth of what a Trump foreign policy and America First means for the average person. I like translating foreign policy into a relevant, actionable task and meaning for the American people, because it really does matter. We spend a lot of money, of U.S. taxpayer money, on these programs. Let me give you one example. There's a UN peacekeeping operation for the Congo. It's $1 billion every year that just gets rolled over every year to do this peacekeeping operation in the Congo.
Wow.
The American people pay 26% of the bill. So $260 million every year just for this operation in the Congo.
Wow.
And we've got some peacekeeping operations at the UN that have been going on for 50 years. Imagine that.
Yeah. And what is involved in that? Yeah. What's all involved, right? Your average person doesn't know.
Correct. And to be honest, it's like a jobs program for the UN bureaucracy.
Okay.
Once they start on something, you know, just the UN way of life is to keep adding people and money and jobs. And meanwhile, they want to keep making the programs bigger because the Americans pay for it all.
Yeah.
So we got to stop that. And Donald Trump is trying to fix Washington as an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I keep bringing up, well, now we got to go after the UN. There's so much to do. That's the point.
Yeah.
We need 4 more years.
And it's great.
There's so much to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's great because he's sort of like the first spend analysis president, you know, like he's coming in and he's seeing places where, because we want that because we're in debt. I mean, we see that. We look at the debt clock because we're in the private sector. And we understand that, you know, we're broke. And so it's nice to hear something, somebody who gives a crap that is willing to cut in places like that. Because, you know, if it were in the private sector, we understand that we would not be able to continue like that. And Trump gets
that because he gets it.
Yeah, he understands
that. People can't do that. They can't spend like that.
Yeah.
Imagine if you got to decide what your neighbors were going to buy for you.
Oh my God, it'd be great.
So every day you'd be like, I want a new swimming pool. I want to go on a shopping spree.
Right.
Because the neighbor is paying. Why not? There's recklessness.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is why Nancy Pelosi can buy $14 a pint ice cream and get it out of her $24,000 fridge, right?
Well, she's at the salon. Yeah.
Exactly.
Rick, one of the things that you just touched on was the foreign policy aspect. Obviously, that's like where your heart is. And you mentioned in your RNC speech, there was the part where you talked about how you wished that people could see Trump in action when he's charming Angela Merkel and you know, working his magic. I'm just wondering, like, what other insider secrets you can give about that?
Yeah.
Like, if you can give other examples, because I loved the way that you put that.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And I don't think people have an appreciation for his art form. And since you've seen
Well, look, I'm gonna tell you a quick story that I've never told publicly, so I'm giving you guys this.
Oh, yay!
This is This is a very funny story, and it shows Donald Trump's humor and style of negotiation. So we were up at the UN. I can't even remember if I say the date and I get it wrong, the left media is going to be like, he got the date wrong. It's not a true story. So I'm not going to give you the date, but it was at the UN during the UN General Assembly. Anyway, Donald Trump, Angela Merkel at the UN were negotiating and doing one of those, you know, we haven't seen each other in a couple of months, so let's touch on all the issues. So of course, Nord Stream 2 and all of the issues, Huawei. And of course, one of the top issues is NATO spending. And once again, we're like, why aren't you making your commitment, meeting your commitment. You said that you would spend 2% of your GDP on defense. You're not doing it, you know, and the chancellor would say, oh, you don't understand our, you know, Bundestag and the parliament process. And Donald Trump was saying, do you think that it's easy for me with Congress? Like, come on.
Yeah.
We all got to push through. And so he's pushing hard, and there's lots of excuses coming, and there's the Germans are saying, we're going to get there, we're going to get there, we're trying, but, you know, might not be till 2031 and, you know, all of this. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's really getting crazy. So at one point, we're getting near the end, and President Trump says, okay, here's my deal. If you will pay 2% of your commitment, the commitment that you made, 2% on defense spending, I'll bring Rick home.
And wait, so they saw that as a huge positive? Were they sick of you at that point?
Let's just say that the chancellor was like, she didn't quite get the moment of humor at that exact time. And she said, no, that's not what I'm asking. But
I saw
the national security advisor and some others saying, let me think about that. That could be a good deal.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
But it just
that's
goes,
perfect.
It goes to show, like, he's in touch on what we're saying, how we're pushing, the incredible need to get the defense spending done. And he's using humor. I mean, he was using his ability to humor but negotiate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's totally of the people, and he's focused on the people constantly. Mm-hmm. And that's the way he negotiates, with humor and charm and tough leverage.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're out on the campaign trail. I know you've been very busy. You're in Ohio now. So what, I mean, because we go back and forth on how we feel this election is going to go based on just the stupidity that we see in the world right now.
There's a lot of dumb out there.
There's so much dumb.
There's a lot of dumb.
And so I've been back and forth. Like, I'll feel a surge of optimism, and then I'll feel like, this is never going to happen because of the mail-in, because of how just awful the left is. So as part of the campaign now, where do you see it going realistically? I know we all want Trump to win, but where do you see it going? Do you think that we'll know the results, like, within a week of the election?
Because if we don't know the results, she's going to be like in a corner in a fetal position, rocking back and forth. It's going to be so bad.
It's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad. Yeah, so we're worried
about
that.
First of all, let me just clarify one thing in case the media jump on it. I'm not on the campaign officially. I'm on the RNC, as you said.
Okay, right. All right.
Not officially on the campaign. I'm really positive. As I go out and talk to, I've been on the big tour in Pennsylvania and Ohio talking to a lot of our log cabin gay and lesbian conservatives, which are ecstatic for Trump. I've never seen anything like it. We are just blowing up when it comes to support for Donald
That's
Trump
awesome.
And the gay and lesbian community. The gay left is just having a meltdown right now. They are coming
so
at
great.
Me hard. They're complaining about everything. But, you know, my grandpa Grinnell used to tell me that you take the most incoming attacks when you're over the target. And so I feel like I'm over the target right about now. And we're really helping the president in this community. I think that there's incredible excitement across Pennsylvania and Ohio. When we stop and we go to the local, you know, GOP offices, I've never seen intensity like I see it. People are willing to walk over glass for this president. They see Washington is broken. They see that Donald Trump is the outsider. Look, there's no better example than the hair salon in San Francisco moment. What Nancy Pelosi really was saying to this hair salon owner was, wait a minute, you don't understand the Washington rules. I, as the elite, get to break the rules of salon and COVID rules, and you are supposed to just go along. You're not supposed to step out and out me for breaking the rules. I'm an elite. I get to go into the salon.
Totally.
And when you break the rules, the Washington, D.C. rules, by telling people that I'm breaking the rules, you owe me an apology because you don't understand the Washington rules. And everybody outside of Washington is like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you're crazy.
Think that you should live by these rules, except in Washington, D.C., it's a big yawner. They're like, oh, yeah, she's the Speaker of the House. She gets to do what she wants. This is the Washington rules.
Yeah.
And so Nancy Pelosi's mistake is that she went to San Francisco and thought she was still in Washington.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear this over and over in Pennsylvania and Ohio saying, what is going on with these people in Washington? What are they drinking? Is the water supply tainted? Because the rest of us don't live like that. I don't think that we have a fight between Republicans and Democrats anymore. We have a fight between Washington and the rest of America.
Yeah, you're right. It's
and I'm hearing that. And mm-hmm. so we now have a Republican president who's reaching out to the working class. And I have to say, it's a long answer to your question. I think Donald Trump is going to win Pennsylvania and Ohio. I feel it.
Oh, God, I hope you're right. As we have said time and time again, you guys, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. It's not just Trump and Biden on the ballot. It's America itself. It's the police who are being maligned as crazy radicals trying to defund them. It's our safety. It's our whole way of life. Those are the things that are on the ballot.
And that's why we're asking you to join an effort sponsored by Job Creators Network. They're working with the biggest conservative hosts in America, Hannity, Elder, Prager, Gorka, Gallagher, Hewitt, Bongino, Shapiro, and Sarah Carter.
And us. And we're happy to spread the word, because this election is about one thing, and that is turnout. The left has their get out the vote machine, and we need ours.
How can you help? Well, just go to keepamericaamerica.com and become a volunteer in the biggest get out the vote effort in conservative history. You'll be given tasks that can make a huge difference in November. Do a little, do a lot, but please just do your part.
Go to keepamericaamerica.com right now. That's keepamericaamerica.com. If you were his advisor right now, how would you advise him to conduct himself these final days? Like, what would you say to not do? What would you say to do more of?
I'm talking to the president pretty regularly. I just talked to him about 20 minutes ago. And
Tell him we said hi. Just tell him we said hi.
Mr. President, I can't talk very long because I have a Zoom call with...
with the chicks
on the right.
Yeah, the chicks on the right. It's no big deal. It's no big deal.
I try to give him really raw advice from what I hear from people. I'll tell you what one person said to me in Ohio, which I thought was really important and that we should get the word out, is this woman said to me that she works with students who are about to default or defaulting on their student loans. And not enough people know that Donald Trump extended the deadline for loan forgiveness mm-hmm. until December 31st. So he's giving even an extra long time to students who are behind to kind of freeze the payments and to let them catch up because of COVID. So that's one thing that I think is really important to get out there. I try to just give President Trump, you know, information that I hear, try to be the voice of the people to say, this is what somebody said to me, or this is what the concerns are. I took away two big concerns from Pennsylvania and Ohio, and these are two things that I told the president. One is that people are very concerned about the rise of China and the mm-hmm. fact that we talk a lot about it, but we don't do enough. They stole a lot of our manufacturing jobs. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to follow through on bringing our supply chain home and being tough on China. And the second thing I heard is that they want to get back to getting an infrastructure project, you know, going in Washington so that we can fund a large infrastructure project. That means jobs. That means better bridges, better tunnels, better airports, better infrastructure. And so I tried to share those two aspects of what I constantly hear from voters in Pennsylvania and Ohio.
Yeah. What about the increasing violence across the country? I know that that's been a concern for a lot of us out here, you know, not even just parents, because we're both parents, but just, you know, just everybody watching how different the landscape of the country looks as opposed to just a couple years ago, and how, you know, everything is changing. Everything just seems to be, the country just looks different, you know?
It's our way of life is under assault. Our American flag.
Yeah.
I've been telling retired folks to come out of retirement and tell the story of America. Tell their children, tell their grandchildren how great America is. We're not a racist, sexist, homophobe country.
Right.
We have our problems, but we know how to fix them. But we are the greatest country in the world. Let's stand up and be proud of our country. And, you know, what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are doing is they're turning our country into a terrible place.
Yeah.
And I just have to say to people who, you know, are saying, oh, our country is racist, sexist, homophobe. Was it during Barack Obama and Joe Biden's 8 years? Did we just all of a sudden become a racist, sexist, homophobic country in 3 years? I just don't understand their thinking. They're literally trying to change our way of life. I mean, you look at sports, you can't stand for the flag and cancel culture. And I went through this cancel culture assault at Carnegie Mellon, and they didn't win. We beat them back. And we said, you know, Carnegie Mellon University hired me as a fellow, and the students and faculty came at me, and the school stood up to them. So I think that we are hopeful that we can beat this back, but we are in a culture war for really the heart of America. Mm-hmm. I do hear from Europeans, where I served in Berlin for 2 years, regularly saying, gosh, I hope the Americans understand what is at stake here. Don't go in the way of socialism. Fight hard for capitalism. Europeans, European conservatives and European individuals who really want the world to be pro-West and capitalistic are looking at our election and saying, fight hard for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He's got to win. Otherwise, we're going down. Joe Biden is just too weak to stand up to these protesters.
So weak.
And we see that they're just, you know, going to run right over them. And we're going to have sports canceled. We're going to have the cancel culture take over. We are at a very serious fork in the road.
Yeah.
And we have to elect Donald Trump. Otherwise, we're going to have the onslaught of America really falling to the cancel culture and the people who want us to kind of sit down and not recognize the greatness of America.
Oh, yeah. You can feel it. I mean, it's just you can literally feel it.
We don't want to keep you longer than we promised we would, but I do have one quick, just final question that's personal, because I know you love dogs and I need to know what kind of dog you have.
Dogs. What kind of dog do you have?
I have a Texas Blue Lacy, the state dog of Texas.
Really? Ooh. Is that, okay, so Texas Blue Lacy. So is it like a, is
it's
that
a
sort of like
dog.
A, okay, so it's a hunting dog. I'm going to have to look that up, because I'm pretty good with my dog breeds and I don't know what that is.
I know, everybody says that to me. They're like, I know every dog and I've never heard of it, but it's the state dog of Texas.
Okay.
There's a Blue Lacy and there's a Red Lacy. Our dog is, you know, my heart and soul. I went through cancer and I had a terrible bout of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. On stage 3, and I thought, oh my God, this is the end. My dog Lola was just so sensitive. And I know people say this, but I got to tell you, I'd come home from a chemo appointment and she was always, you know, jumping and excited when people come home. I would come home from a chemo appointment and she would be at the front door with her tail totally down, her ears down. So sensitive. Now you ask me, how does this dog know that I'm coming home from a chemotherapy appointment, totally like going to go straight to bed, dragging, feeling terrible? I walk in the door and this little thing just quietly follows me with her tail tucked in such a submissive
way. We don't deserve them, right?
And then as soon as I would get into bed, she would hop up very carefully and nudge her way very closely over to me and she'd lick my bald head and she would just be with me. I mean, I'm almost crying now. She'd be with me as I would fall asleep.
God bless her.
This is what
her.
She
and
did. She followed
it.
Me around and just was a lover at a time that, you know, I physically was really down. And and that's not her normal personality, is to jump on the bed and to be rough, but she just knew how to respond. And
they just know of it. We really don't deserve them,
We don't.
They're the best.
Rick, thank you so much for your time today. We've enjoyed having you so much.
You have been a joy. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
We appreciate
it. Let's all be positive.
Okay. Yes, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Look forward to doing it again.
Thank you.
I would love it.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye. Wasn't he the greatest?
Oh my gosh, just fantastic.
I love him.
He is very, just dear. Just so dear.
I love all of that.
Yeah.
And see, this is just another reason that people should be subscribing to this podcast, because you never know the kind of stories you're going to hear.
Yeah, we're going to like force him to come on again. And then he's going to tell us another juicy morsel about Trump.
That's exactly
right. Or somebody else.
Now, there are some smart people out there who do subscribe, who actually took the time, and we so appreciate this, to write a nice review on the Apple iTunes podcast platform, which we really appreciate. One is from Nicole. She calls us the podcast you need to hear. She says, these ladies only speak the truth. They are so entertaining and a joy to listen to. I discovered their Facebook page a few months back and have been watching the morning shows daily. Now I have discovered their podcast, Heart Eyes. eyes emoji.
Oh, we got hard eyes.
Hard eyes.
Wow.
I am so happy to have not only one, but two conservative women to listen to while I'm at work. Keep up the work, ladies. Y'all are awesome. And then somebody with a handle that has like 17,000 numbers in it said, love the chicks. I'm listening from Texas to your podcast each week and your radio podcast each day. Huge fan of all the things you do.
Love it.
Love it so much.
It's so nice, you guys. Thank you.
You can find us there.
You can find us on all the places. First of all, our website, chicksontheray.com, because we're probably going to be shut down on all the other places.
Right.
And social media, because we're just waiting for that day, because it's right before the election, and Mark Zuckerberg is from the planet Gleeborg 9, and he doesn't like us because we're conservative. So we're just getting ready to just be on Parler, which we're there if you want to find us. We're Chicks on the Right on Parler. But we are on Facebook until he decides to close us down. We're Chicks on the Right there. And then Twitter at Chicks on Right, Instagram at Chicks on Right.
Radio show is on WIBC.com, and you can stream us live 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on weekday mornings.
There you go. Until next week, you guys.
Bye.